Der Kulturkiosk. Ein Podcast von Oberpfalz Medien.
Servus zusammen beim Kulturkiosk. Ich bin die Maria. Heute zu Gast bei mir ist der Filmemacher Adam Freed. Wohnt seit 2019 in Regensburg. Aufgewachsen ist er in einem Vorort von Chicago. Erst kürzlich hat er zwei Filme produziert, die beide in Regensburg spielen und da auch gedreht wurden. Einmal gibt es den Kurzfilm The Walk, in dem er die Nazi-Vergangenheit Regensburg zum Thema gemacht hat. Man sieht ihn da 10 Minuten lang mit seinem Hund durch die Straße laufen, von Stolperstein zu Stolperstein, vorbei an jüdischen Grabsteinen, die in mittelalterlichen Gebäuden eingelassen sind, und unter anderem vorbei am Kolosseum, das unter den Nazis als KZ-Außenlager von Flossenbürg genutzt worden war. Auch in seinem aktuellen Film Everything's Kosher thematisiert er sein Jüdischsein in Regensburg. Für einen Tag hat er da einen Feinkostladen eröffnet, einen Deli, und einen Film drüber gedreht. Und genau darüber und natürlich über noch viel mehr möchte ich jetzt mit ihm sprechen. Hi Adam, it's so nice to have you.
Hello, und es tut mir leid, ich spreche ein bisschen Deutsch. Nur Englisch.
Would you like to give a short introduction to yourself? Who are you?
Sure. My name is Adam Freed, and I've been living in Germany for about 6 years now. And I greatly apologize for not learning more German. I speak a little bit. However, when I was learning, I'll use the excuse of there was COVID, shut down the school, and the last thing I wanted to do was sit home by myself learning.
Yes.
Sit home by myself studying German.
Yeah.
Okay. I regret that. I should have, because I do want to start learning more. But that's my situation. And yeah, so I've been living in the beautiful city of Regensburg for about 6 years. I have a young daughter. And I decided to make a few films about my experiences. And that's why we're here today, I guess.
How did you end up in Regensburg? You were born outside of Chicago? How come?
All right. There was a long story that got me to Regensburg. I'll keep it short. I was born in Livingston, New Jersey, which is right outside of New York City.
Ah, okay.
And when I was very young, 1 year old, my family moved to Chicago. Mm-hmm. So I was in Chicago my whole life, went to university in Chicago, grew up there, and after university was working in the city of Chicago, and I've always liked moving around. Mm-hmm. Okay, so one of the greatest things I ever did was when I turned 30, I moved from Chicago to California. Mm. And that taught me that I can move somewhere and meet new people and enjoy it. So I've always liked traveling. And then about 6 or 7 years ago, I was vacationing on a vacation in Europe, and I met my ex-wife, mm-hmm, on the side of the river, the Isar River in Munich.
Okay.
So I met her, and it was love at first sight. And when the first 15 minutes, I said, you know what? I'm going to marry that girl.
Oh, wow.
Flash forward 6 months later, we are married, mm-hmm, living in the U.S., and that's when we got to know each other. And then, again, long story short, we decided to try to have a child. And we got pregnant. And basically, we decided, you know what? I have a very small family. Let's move back to Germany, where she was from. Her family grew up in Kelheim.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So they're from Kelheim. And her friends and family were in Kelheim and Regensburg. She has family there. So we decided to try to raise our daughter there, and that's how I ended up there.
And you're still there.
I'm still there. Within the first year, we actually decided to get divorced, but it was, we didn't know each other that well. But it's a good ending because we're good friends. We take care of our daughter, and that was a big thing for me. My father left my family when I was young. And I said, I can't do that to her. Mm-hmm. So that's why I'm still in Regensburg. Mm-hmm. And that's what brought up things about wanting to make films, mm-hmm, about Regensburg, mm-hmm, and my experiences.
And mm-hmm. When you decided to move to Germany, was there any hesitation because of the fact you have Jewish roots? Did you think about that or?
A little bit. And, but it wasn't a big, it wasn't a big problem for me at the time. I felt very, you know, I feel as a Jewish person, and we can get into this later, I feel safe, you know, in Germany. But there was a little culture shock.
Okay.
You know, and when I was living in the old town in Regensburg, mm-hmm. and one of the first times I saw a Stoppelsteine, mm-hmm. and I said, "What's that?"
Yeah.
And again, I grew up Jewish. I'd never seen those. So my wife at the time pointed them out to me, and I would take pictures of them. And I would go home and research, mm-hmm. you know, why is it there? Why was the family there? What happened to them? And that's interesting because I used to like to run. So I would run all through the city. Mm-hmm. And after a few months, you know where all of these things are. And when you start to research them and you find out the stories, you can't forget them. Mm-hmm. So I would be walking down the street. And I would say, oh, there's the Brandis family over there, mm-hmm. or the Hahn family over there, what happened? Or right outside my front door was a stone for Simon Oberdorfer. Mm-hmm. And he was a Jewish businessman who built one of the world's first velodromes in Regensburg.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So every day I'd walk out my front door with my dog, and I'd say hi to Simon, his mm-hmm. wife, and his brother-in-law, mm-hmm. who all perished, you know, mm-hmm. during the war. So, yeah, and... You know, growing up Jewish, we learn about the Holocaust, but when you live here as a Jewish person, it's much different. Like one of the streets, again, right close to me, one of my favorite Italian delis is on, and that is the street where Kristallnacht actually happened.
Mm-hmm.
Kristallnacht.
Yes.
Or one of the streets in the city that, you know, the Jewish businesses were vandalized and destroyed, and some of the people were sent to Dachau. And, yeah, it was really fascinating for me. So the more I would find out these stories, it started to build a vision in my head of how I needed to share this information. Because, like I said, all the people back in the U.S., you know, it's like a world apart. Mm. So that's how I kind of came up with, I kind of got the itching to make some documentary films. And that's kind of what got me into this thing.
How did you know to make a film?
Well, good question. I've been an entrepreneur my whole life. Mm-hmm. So I've tried many different things. One of the first things I ever did was I owned a little cigar shop, okay. in Chicago, and I did that for about 3 years. And then I was doing some more things. And then I was into photography and little videos. And I didn't want to make my living as a photographer. So I started printing for people. So that led to a printing business that got really big and mm-hmm. it was successful for about 15 years. And after I moved here to Regensburg, I ended up getting, you know, selling that business, getting out of it. And I was looking for, what else can I do? What else can I do here? And the biggest thing that got me into making documentary films or wanting to was when I was walking down, walking the street in Stettenhof in Regensburg, and my ex-wife points to the Colosseum building and said, that used to be a concentration camp. And I looked at her and I said, I don't believe you. What are you talking about? Because I grew up learning about the Holocaust. I've always watched, you know, films and things. And the more I started to research, I started to say, okay, why was it there? Where did the prisoners come from? And that's what started the whole process for wanting to do films like that. And I would find, you know, again, no one in the U.S. knows, not many people know about these sub camps, mm-hmm. right? Everyone knew about, you know, Auschwitz or mm-hmm. Dachau or the main mm-hmm. camps, but, and you kind of heard about work camps, but you know, most people don't know exactly what they were or what mm-hmm. they are and what happened to the people. And I used to say, oh, well, these people are working. You know, why would they want to kill them? They're actually doing work. And it was, no, it wasn't work will set you free, Arbeit macht frei. Mm. It was, you know, it was annihilation through work. And the more I dug into those stories, it was just fascinating. So finding out about the Messerschmitt factory in Regensburg, you know, I'd walk down the street. I was like, wait, why is one of these streets named Messerschmitt Way? And so I would look at the old maps and figure out, okay, there used to be the factories over here and the airfield was over there and the barracks and all these. And then finding out about how when the Allies, could reach those factories and then would bomb them. And so it was all very fascinating to me. And so that's kind of what sparked my interest in wanting to make documentary films. And again, one of the things was I was researching the Colosseum and the camp there in Flossenbürg. And I ordered this book, like an encyclopedia of camps. And the first volume came and it was about 1,000 pages thick. And I was like, wow, that's, you know, most people think, oh, maybe there were 10, 20 camps around. No, there were thousands of these smaller camps. So I ordered the rest of the volume of these, and there's literally 6 or 7 volumes of these 1,000-page books. So I looked at that stack of books, and I said, there's enough material here to do films for the rest of my life on. So that was kind of what started my journey to want to make films. And a good friend of mine from high school, actually, he's a director in the U.S. and he does kind of like reality television things and documentary film things. His name is Michael Harrigan, and I was talking with him and I was explaining to him. I said, I want to do these films, you know, documentaries about all these things. And then I was telling him about my family and you know, I hadn't talked to my dad in a long time, and I wasn't talking to my sister, and they hadn't met my daughter. And he said, Adam, your story, that's kind of the story here. So we made a decision that we did not, with everything's kosher, we did not want to make a Holocaust film. Mm. We touch on it a little bit, and we talk a little bit about the history of it, but we didn't want to make a Holocaust film for everything's kosher. So that's kind of how we started planning. We started planning it, and I told him, I'm thinking about a Jewish deli. Because, you know, I started thinking about all the foods that I missed here. And, you know, besides my friends and some family, I was missing the foods and I couldn't get a lot of the things from the U.S. that I really liked. So I thought, oh, what if I opened up a deli here? That could be interesting. So we started outlining of what that could look like. And yeah, that's kind of how the movie came about.
What's your favorite Jewish food?
Favorite Jewish food. Okay, so this is interesting. So I would walk into my favorite Jewish food. One of them is a skirt steak sandwich. Mm-hmm. Do you know what skirt steak is?
Not really.
Okay. So I would walk in. This is why I wanted to make films, or one of the reasons. I walked into the Metzgerei, mm-hmm. and I said, do you have a skirt steak? And they looked at me like I was crazy. Like, what is a skirt steak? And it really goes back to the Jewish history, or the history of Jewish foods and Jewish people, because the skirt steak is considered almost like a second class cut of meat, mm-hmm. right? It was almost something they would just throw away. Mm-hmm. And, you know, back in the days when the Jewish people were being persecuted, or when they were moving to New York City and they couldn't get the, you know, the cuts of meats that they wanted, they had to eat these skirt steaks. And I would literally, at the Metzgerei, I would bring in a picture of a mm-hmm. of a cow, and I would mm-hmm. say, here, you know, this is what I'm looking for. And I think they called it it might have been the crown cut or the Kronig cut or something. Anyway, they had no idea, they can't get it. And I said, okay, this is why I need to try to open up a deli here, mm-hmm. because skirt steaks or potato latkes or my grandmother's, what was the soup? My grandmother's matzo ball soup, which is a matzo ball is very similar to a canoodle. Mm-hmm. Okay. So there are some overlaps in the foods, like the chopped liver. Mm-hmm. Okay. I love chopped liver, and there's certain things that are similar here, but, the, the skirt steak sandwich and corned beef sandwich. I could not find a great corned beef sandwich here. So that was the impetus that was the start to try to do this thing and kind of weave the movie kind of around that.
Was the idea of the movie the first idea or the idea of the deli?
It was kind of the deli.
Mm-hmm.
But that's where it kind of all came together, because I thought it'd be interesting to film trying to open up a Jewish deli in the middle of Bavaria, mm-hmm. middle of Germany. That could be interesting. But also there was the other parts of, you know, these sub camps, you know, in the concentration camp and the concentration camp in the city. And then as we went along with the film, I know the planning, the filming and the actual filming, we kind of figured out we filmed a lot of things. We had over 200 hours of footage.
Oh, wow.
So I learned all about filmmaking. So 200 hours of footage that needed to be cut down to an hour and a half, mm-hmm. right? Because no one wants to watch 3 hours of me. So, so that's kind of how we started getting into it. But it was also very interesting because when we started planning it, we planned for months. I brought a crew over from the U.S. to film here. And the first day we're filming, the film opens up with my daughter's third birthday party, or third birthday. And it's me and her, and that's it. And my ex-wife comes to drop off my daughter, and she says, "Oh, by the way, you can't film our daughter for the film." And I said, "What are you talking about?" So I had a little quick little meeting with all the guys, and I was really upset. And so we had a quick meeting, and we said, "Okay, what are we going to do?" So one of the ideas was Hamilton, my dog. We said, "Okay, well, maybe we'll put a blonde wig on the dog." It was my French bulldog. So literally, that was an idea that I was like, "Well, we could put a blonde wig, and I'll carry him around, so you know, kind of pretend." But then we said, "Okay, well, let's just start filming. And look, if she doesn't want to be filmed, or we can't film it, we won't." And I brought her upstairs, we started filming, and she was three. She's not going to give consent yeah. if she can do it or not. But then we made the respectful decision to not show her face at all. So
from behind,
side, close up mm-hmm. of hands or feet or something, mm-hmm. but we never show her face. And so that was kind of the compromise, mm-hmm. you know, what we decided to do. So that was a compromise of what we decided to do. And I think it worked out really great.
When did you start working on the movie? How old is your daughter now?
she's a little over six now.
Okay.
So she was three. So we started working on it when she was two and a half, you know, the planning. But literally the first day of filming was her mm-hmm. third birthday. And
when you made the movie, was The Walk your first movie? Was it a short film?
Well, it was interesting because we filmed Everything's Kosher, but then I knew there was still a story that I had to tell or that I wanted to tell. And that's where I came up with the idea for The Walk.
Ah, so the film was first.
The production of Everything's Kosher was first.
Okay.
But then I said, okay, I want to do The Walk. And that ended up coming out first.
Yeah, okay.
Because editing a 12-minute film yeah. is a lot easier yeah. than editing 200 hours of, you know, a film.
Yes.
So, but yeah, like I said, there was still a story that I wanted to tell. And the story of The Walk, and that's, you can find that on YouTube. It's open for everyone on my channel, Adam Fried. And The Walk was, I would take my Hamilton, my 10-year-old French bulldog, I would walk him through the streets. So that's kind of how I told the story of Regensburg and what happened. Because, like I said, I'd walk out my front door and there's three Stoppelsteine there. Then Hamilton and I would keep walking and we'd walk down the street where Kristallnacht happened. And then we would go into Neuvorplatz. And in 1930, was it 33 or 36, there was a Nazi rally of book burning. But then what really opened my eyes, you know, my daughter and I would love to play in the, there's a little memorial there, a memorial space. That space, it opened up my eyes to, you know, anti-Semitism didn't start in the 1930s. It literally goes back to the beginning of time. And the memorial in Neuvorplatz is from where the synagogue was. It was the Jewish quarter was there back in the Middle Ages. And in the 1500s, and I think 1515 or 1519, the politics had changed in the area and they banished all of the Jewish people from the city. So they all had to leave. And the only synagogue that was in the town was destroyed. And there's a memorial there now. So that was the ironic thing for me was we were playing, you know, I'm playing with my daughter in this memorial that goes back to the 1500s. So I wanted to show all that and talk about that. And then we would walk by the synagogue and, you know, the synagogue there that's there today is in the exact spot that it was destroyed during Kristallnacht during in 1938. So I found that all extremely fascinating to me. And also, you know, it brings up feelings when you walk as a Jewish person, when you walk by these things and when you learn about what happened there and the people and the families and all that. So I wanted to show all that in a little more of an artistic way. And that's how the walk came about. And I was really proud of it. It's a very powerful film, but it's totally different. It's a different vibe than different feelings than Everything's Kosher. But the two films stand on their own, and they're equal. I'm very proud of both of them. And after we finished the walk, I also used that to I went to a lot of different film festivals around the world with that, and that also helped to promote Everything's Kosher.
Yes. How long did you work on the walk?
The walk was about four. The walk was only about 4 months.
Okay.
Yeah. So it was about 4 months and Everything's Kosher was multiple years, like 2.5 years to, you know, to do everything with it. So it was a huge learning experience. I ended up going to the Berlin Film Festival. There's a film market there. So I went there and I started learning about the industry and learning about the film festivals. And we actually got into the Regensburg Kurz Film Festival last year, and I won a nice prize for the walk. So that was really nice. So, but yeah, that's where I started learning about the industry. We went to the Berlin Film Festival. We went to Cannes. There's a big film market there. There's some in Los Angeles, and really started learning about the industry and the ins and outs and. It's not the easiest industry to break into.
Yes, I can imagine. What did you do by yourself? So you were on screen, you were kind of the producer, you wrote the storyline. Did you cut and film? Or
No. I had a great crew. You know, it's not like a large, you know, 50 person crew. It was literally 5 or 6 people and that was it. So it was hard. It was tough to, you know, we did not have a script for anything.
Oh, okay.
But we had like an outline. Mm-hmm. Okay. I want to show what it's like, you know, with my daughter playing in Bismarckplatz, you know, and running around there and what daily life is like. You know, we show some of the loneliness of me as a person, you know, living in Germany. My friends are back in the US. And you know, kind of the struggles to speak German, but I consider myself an outgoing person, so I make friends with, you know, the cake, I call them the cake ladies, They're the cake truck, mobile truck that's in Bismarckplatz for the farmer's market every week.
Yeah.
So they're in the film. They're in Everything's Kosher. Then they were a lot of fun. So, but yeah, I wanted to show a lot of my daily life and the people I've met in the city and people who help me. There's a great scene with I think his name's it's Christian, who owns a wine shop in Regensburg. And like just spontaneously, I'm throwing away bottles. There's a scene in the film that talks about even the recycling mm-hmm. in Germany compared to the U.S. In the U.S., you throw everything in one can and you say goodbye. In Germany, you know, you have the brown bottles, the green bottles, and the white bottles, and the clear, and the construction that goes here. And the. So, like, just figuring that out it's a really funny scene in the movie. And Christian helps me kind of sort things out. But, like, just spontaneous things like that just kind of happened throughout filming.
The film really is kind of a private film. So you show a lot about your private life. Was that a decision? Did you draw a line till here and not further? Or how did it work out?
That's another thing. I'm a very open person, okay? And yeah, I knew I would show a lot of personal things with, you know, with my family, with my father. But that added to the realness of the film. So we had to show that stuff.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, maybe you can say it if I'm right. Maybe it's a very German question.
Right. Well, and that kind of goes back to, you know, wanting to show my daughter or not. You know, in the U.S., it kind of would be like, oh, yeah, no problem. But that's one of the cultural things, you know, a little more privacy on the German side. So, yeah, a lot of Germans asked me, like, you show a lot of yourself in this film. And, so that was important for me to get it, to capture, you know, the emotions of just things I was going through.
Can you maybe tell a few anecdotes? What did happen behind the scenes? Which material did not make it into the movie?
Well, that's interesting too, because, like I said, we had over 200 hours of footage that we had to cut down, and there was the original title for the film was one of the original titles was The Only Jew in Germany.
Oh, okay, yeah. We can hear you say you feel like the only Jew in Germany in the documentary.
Right. And why I say that is because when I made the film, I had been in Germany 2 or 3 years at least. And literally in my time, I had not met another Jewish person. So that was one of the themes that we were going to do with the film was focusing on that. You know, am I the only Jewish person in Germany? I know I'm not, obviously, but it felt like that. And that was something, that was a theme that I kind of had to deal with and overcome if I was going to stay in Germany. Mm-hmm. Because that was like I said, in the movie, part of the main thing of the movie is, you know, my father leaving our family and how I dealt with that and how given, you know, a Jewish person feeling a little bit alone and being, quote, you know, kind of stuck in Germany. And I say, if I ever said I was stuck, it was because I can't leave my daughter. I'm not going to leave her. So I have to figure out how to, how to reconcile with my feelings of living here, especially walking down the streets that, you know, the bad things from the war happened, you know, there. So, but when we were editing the film, you know, when you edit a film, you might take 200 hours and it gets down to maybe, let's call it 3 hours. And even that is way too long. So you start cutting out more and more and more. And then at one point we were down to about 2 hours. And then we started showing it to a few people. And honestly, there was too much stuff going on because it was too difficult to have a film that shows all that history of Regensburg, but then dealing with my family and then dealing with a deli. It was too much. So we took out, there was a scene that we actually went to the synagogue, and it was actually my first time in the synagogue. And I sat down with the directors of the synagogue and we had a great discussion. But unfortunately that did not make it into the film. And so I was a little disappointed about that, but like I said, no one wants to watch a film 3 hours of me. So this wasn't Top Gun Part 2, and I'm not Brad Pitt or Tom Cruise. So so that was cut out. And then in the film, we also went back to where I grew up in the Chicago area, and I actually went back to the synagogue where I had my bar mitzvah, mm-hmm. and I sat down and talked with a rabbi who was not my rabbi, but he was a rabbi of the synagogue, because I wanted to talk to him and maybe get some insight about dealing with living in Germany as a Jewish person and all that. So, yeah, it was interesting. There were definitely some scenes that ended up being cut out. However, the best of the best made it into the film. So I'm really proud of it.
Do you still feel like you're the only Jew in Germany? Or did you somehow manage the feeling?
No, I don't feel like I'm the only Jew in Germany. but that's also because I now go to the synagogue. Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. even though I don't understand exactly what they're saying, because the synagogue in Regensburg has a lot of Russian Orthodox Jewish people. And so I don't understand a lot of it. But it's extremely powerful for me to just be able to go there and sit and to think about what the people have gone through just to be able to worship at that location, you know, or in the world in general. So it's every time I go there, it's very powerful for me to do that. And what's also very interesting, in the film, I started doing family research, because when I moved to Germany, I did have no idea if my family was, you know, if part of my family was in the Holocaust or not. So I started doing research, and I found out that my family had immigrated to the U.S. from Russia, from Belarus, Russia, or Minsk, mm-hmm. Russia. Mm-hmm. Minsk, which is now in Belarus. So, and they had come over to the U.S. in the early 1900s. So it was probably during the Russian revolutions or something happening there, and they decided to get out of Minsk, Russia. And if they had stayed until the mid to late 30s, or early 40s, 1940s, they would have been killed. So it was interesting for me to find that out, because I had no idea where my ancestors were from. And when they went over to the U.S., on my mom's side, they had to stop in Havana, Cuba. And I've always loved Cuba for some reason. Maybe that's why. But they stopped in Havana, Cuba for 2 years before going to Chicago. And then on my father's side, they ended up going through New York. And my father's great-grandfather lived in Brooklyn. So what's really interesting is when I go into the synagogue, I have my great-grandfather's, I never met him, I have his actual passport, mm-hmm. his Russian passport. And when I go in there, I carry it with me. And it's just one of those powerful things that I enjoy doing. Mm.
Do you feel safe in Germany?
Do I feel safe in Germany?
Or did that feeling change?
I do feel safe in Germany. And I felt safer before last October.
Yeah.
But for, you know, there's different reasons. You know, before what happened in Israel and with the Palestinians, I was feeling extremely safe in Germany, okay? Almost safer than I would in the U.S. because after living here and researching and seeing how the German government handles the past, it made me feel really good, mm-hmm. you know? Because, what was it, 20, 30 years ago, there were no markers for these subcamps or anything like that. So my feeling is the German government had did an excellent job in, you know, taking responsibility for what happened and making sure that that doesn't happen again. Now, after October 7th, right, things did change a little bit for me. You know, you see more graffiti around, you know, from the river to the sea, Palestine will be free. And, you know, and I have empathy for the Palestinian people, but I also have, it's a very complicated situation. And I also have empathy for, you know, the Jewish people in Israel just trying to live, but it's extremely complicated and I'm not an expert on that. However, like after the walk came out, at the end of the walk, you know, I talk about what it's like to be a Jewish person living in Germany, and then the film ends with never again. Well, after I started promoting the film, that never again changed to never again is now. So it was an interesting shift of going from, you know, Holocaust remembrance to, mm-hmm. oh, wait, there's something new that just happened. Mm-hmm. And that amount of, you know, that number of Jewish people have not been killed since the Holocaust in one, you know, one event. So yeah, it was different, but yes, overall, I really enjoyed living in Germany and I feel very safe here.
Do you think the movie or kind of both movies would be now different movies if you made them after 7th October?
The Walk for sure. Yeah, The Walk for sure. Yeah, because it's... We still have remembrance, obviously, for the Holocaust, but there's a new chapter in the anti-Semitism and struggle with Jewish people. So I absolutely wanted to put some of that information in there.
You just said you're now going to the synagogue in Regensburg. Was that since the film? What was there that made you go there? How religious are you? Or is it the feeling?
That's a big question because I talk about it in the film and I lived it. You know, I didn't, for most of my life, I didn't, you know, after I had my, so when I'm 12 or 13, I have a bar mitzvah. And then the same year, my father left. So we kind of stopped going to synagogue and, you know, the whole Jewish, you know, you have it in your blood, but religion wasn't a big part of my life. But living here, and I talk about this in the walk, living here, it has opened my eyes more and to be proud of being Jewish again and to, you know, to know what the struggle of the Jewish people have gone through. And again, when I moved here, all I could think of was, oh, the, you know, the 1930s and anti-Semitism back then. But then, oh, wait a minute, you know, this, you know, the Jewish people in this town were kicked out in the 1500s, you know, for 200, 300 years. And even before that, on the, you know, you look at the dome, the Regensburg Cathedral. And if you know where to look, there's one statue that is, you know, it's literally dates back to like the 1200s, Judensau. And that, you know, that's, again, that really, really opened my eyes to, you know, anti-Semitism going back to, it's literally the beginning of time. So, yeah, it's interesting. But so I've definitely, you know, in the past few years, I've gone to the synagogue 100% more times than before I made the movie. And yeah, there's something that draws me to it. I enjoy going there. Like I said, even though I can't communicate with most of the people there, it's very powerful to be there.
In the film, we can meet your daughter. What do you teach her about her Jewish roots?
Well, she's definitely, you know, too young to learn about a lot of things. But I, you know, there's small things that I grew up with, like lighting the menorah, you know, at Hanukkah time. And the menorah is, there's eight candles, and for the eight nights of Hanukkah, that the, you know, as Jewish people were leaving Egypt, I believe, and they had enough oil for one day, and that ended up at, you know, there's a story of Hanukkah lasting for eight nights. And the funniest thing was, the first time I tried to light the candles with her, well, first I was singing the Hanukkah songs that I know, you know, there's Baruch HaTorana, and I'm singing the song, and she puts her hands over her ears, and she says, "Papa, stop, Papa, stop." It's really funny. And then I have her help light the candles, which is this really special, you know, tradition. So I'm lighting these candles, and she was about 4 years old at the time. What does she start to do? She starts to blow them out. And I said, "No, no, no. You can't, you're not supposed to blow them out. You let these burn." But she didn't get that. So I've started to incorporate some Jewish traditions. But as she gets older, obviously, then I'll be teaching her more of that.
Your film is to be shown in Flossenbürg on the 24th of April. How do you feel about that? Have you been to Flossenbürg? What does that feel like to have your film shown there?
It's really interesting because I don't know if I would say it's hard to say I'm excited, but I'm proud. I'm really proud that it's being shown there. And I have been to Flossenbürg. And the first time I went, it was because when I was researching, I said, okay, you know, the subcamp in Regensburg, what happened? How did they get there? And they said, oh, they were prisoners from Flossenbürg. I said, Flossenbürg? I've never heard of that. So I had to go research. So I drove out there, and it was a beautiful fall day, and I was walking around by myself, and it was really powerful. Because again, I had never heard of it. And anytime you walk around an ex-camp, it's really powerful. So, but I am extremely proud that, you know, for the 80th anniversary, they chose my film to show and to talk. So I'm really excited. I am proud and excited about it. And I just wish there were more people from my, you know, friends and family from the U.S. who could come over and experience it, you know, with me. So, but I've been back a few times, and it's a powerful place to visit. And one of the things that struck me, I remember the first time I drove out there, was just how, like you get off the highway and it's another, I don't know, 15 or 20 minutes to get there. And I just think, what was that, you know, 80 years ago, you know, there's even less roads, obviously. And unless you lived right around there, you would never know what happened there. So maybe, maybe not.
Yeah, that's... I ask myself these questions a lot because it's kind of my heritage. I wasn't born like centuries ago, but you could have known if you would not close your eyes. I think so. But yeah.
Well, and that's very interesting, but also, you know, I look at what's happening in the U.S. now. And last week, I was in the U.S. and there was a protest going on in New York City down Fifth Avenue. And I went there and I, you know, walked down the street with tens of thousands of protesters. And I, you know, during that, I felt proud. I felt like, okay, you know, this is interesting that you have the freedom to be able to do this with no repercussions. But at the same time, you know, I think about, okay, 80 years ago, if you were to, you know, go against the regime or the government at the time, you might have ended up in Flossenbürg. So it was really powerful for me to be able to experience it, and also to know, to think back, okay, this is why we have our freedoms, freedom of speech, freedom of protest, that kind of thing. So yeah, it was powerful, and I was happy to be able to do it. But I also think, like, okay, if you were living in, you know, the town of Flossenbürg at the time, you know, it's very interesting. Very interesting for me, you know, to think about that. So
you said you visited the USA. Did you just visit New York, or have you been somewhere else?
When I go back, I'll go to New York. I go back to Chicago. I go to Ohio. So, yeah, kind of all over. And some places that are very Democratic, and some places that are very Republican. So the full mix.
How are the people doing?
It's very difficult, just how split everyone is, because you're either 100% on the left or 100% on the right, and there just doesn't seem to be much in the middle anymore. So, and it's just interesting because, you know, most people one-on-one, you know, there's no problem, but you get these, you know, packs of people who think a certain way, and that causes lots of trouble. So I think the U.S. is going through a very tough time right now. And you know what, though? And, you know, fingers crossed that in 2 years, and this is the beautiful part of being a democratic nation, in 2 years, there's, you know, certain elections for, you know, Congress, I believe. And then in every 4 years, the people have the right to elect a new president. So if that's what they choose, then that can happen. So that's all we can.
So you're hopeful.
Yeah, I'm hopeful for it. Because the alternative is there's a lot of things in the administration right now that are going on that feel just more like a dictatorship, and I don't think that's my personal opinion. I don't like that for our country. So that's how I feel about that.
I can imagine it can be very depressing. You like researched the Holocaust for 3 years, more than 3 years. Did you read things every day? Is human capable of researching that much and not losing your faith?
You know what? That's really, really interesting. And I had to deal with that because, like I said, I had these encyclopedias. And I love traveling, you know, around Germany, and also I love Austria and the mountains. So I was researching, I was going into the mountains one summer, and I was researching, were there any camps down there? And there was one in, by Ebensee, it was called. And it was fascinating to me because it was, you know, they would dug out the inside of the mountains there. Because after they were going to build the V2 rocket inside of the mountains in Ebensee. And that place just fascinated me because they have literally 60 or 70 kilometers of tunnels inside of these mountains. And you can go into one of them. So one of them is open to the public, and it's, you know, 200 meters long and 10 meters or so, 10 or 12 meters high. And they were building these factories. The Nazis were building factories inside of these mountains. And that place is really fascinating to me because, again, no one in the U.S. knows about that at all. And that was another, you know, one of the next projects that I'm working on is an entire, like a series of these hidden camps, the camps that no one knows about. So for the past few years, I've gone back to every year when they have their memorial, and I've done some filming there. So that's just a part of another documentary series that I'm starting to work on. One of the camps I visited, I think it was on my birthday a few years ago. I went and visited a camp and I'm like, what am I doing? It's my birthday and I'm going to visit an old concentration camp. So you do kind of become obsessed with it. And yeah, when you start seeing reading about the details of what happened at these places, it's kind of a rabbit hole, dark rabbit hole to go down. But people back in the U.S. when they saw the walk, they thought it was really powerful and they thanked me for doing this, of keeping the history alive. So, and I think that's really important because even today there are, the Holocaust deniers, and with the internet getting these groups together, it's crazy. And to them, I tell them, you know what, come visit me in Germany. I'll show you where it happened and I'll show you the camps that the hidden camps that, you don't know about.
Ein paar schnelle Fragen.
And you have to decide fast. let's try apple or banana.
Apple.
Fast.
Oh, sorry, faster. I'll try to answer in German. Apfel.
Ah, very good. Cinema or streaming?
Cinema.
Hard work or talent?
Hard work.
Improvising or planning?
Improvising.
Calendar or no calendar?
No calendar.
Talking or listening?
Talking.
Talking or writing?
Talking.
Talking or filming?
Filming.
Pastrami or corned beef?
Pastrami.
On screen or behind the screen?
Behind the screen.
Research or filming?
Filming.
Filming or cutting? So.
Oof. Editing is actually fun, so cutting.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, we have to talk about that. message or call?
Message.
Coffee or tea?
Coffee.
Sleeping in or getting up early?
Sleeping in.
Yes, I'm with you. You said 200 hours of material. It was fun to to go through all that. Are you sure?
What I learned was making a film is really, really difficult, and you can have one shot that's amazing, but one shot doesn't make a film. And one of the questions I had when I started doing this was, what's more important, how the film looks or the story? Mm-hmm. And what I realized at the end of this process was the story. The story makes everything, because you could film, in this day and age, you have an iPhone that has an amazing 4K HD camera on it, and you can make a film with that. Versus, whether you have a $50,000 camera or a $1,000 camera, it doesn't matter. It's all about the story. And yeah, big thing I learned was making a film is really, really difficult.
Der Kulturtipp.
Do you have something to recommend to the listeners? Is there a book you read, a film you saw, a band you like, anything?
Ooh, it's a lot of good stuff. You know what? So there was a movie that came out earlier this year called The Brutalist, and it won an Oscar. And, when I first heard about it, I thought it was, it'll be a Holocaust film or something. And I didn't want to, and plus it was like over 3 hours long. And I was like, oh, I'm not going to see that. And it was it's a low budget. I think they made it for about $15 million, which for a feature film, like, look, my film was way, way less expensive than that to make. But for a Hollywood film like that, $15 million, I think it was $15 million, lower budget. And I started watching it and I got sucked in, and it's an amazing film. So if you can rent it or stream it somewhere, The Brutalist, I would highly recommend it. It's a very good film. And it does not feel like a 3 hour film. It's shot so well. I really like Adrian Brody. And it was just done really, really well.
Have you always been a movie enthusiast? What are movies to you?
When you watch Everything's Kosher, you'll see I'm an emotional person. So yeah, I like a great dramatic film. You know, there's certain films that can really move you. And yeah, so I really enjoy film. But even now, I'll I'm taking videos with my daughter or out somewhere. And I love putting that to music, an emotional song. It's very enjoyable. But doing that, putting a 30-second clip online is a lot different than producing an entire hour and a half, film. So
what are the three top things you learned
in making the films?
Yes.
The three top things I've learned, patience, because things don't happen when you make films. It doesn't happen quickly. And patience and dedication. Because from the day you say, I'm going to make a film, I have a great appreciation for, again, everything and everyone and everything you have to do that goes into making a film. So the a film is not a sprint, it is the longest marathon of your life. And so when you start, like the day you stop, even the day you stop filming, the film is only 20, 30% done, okay? Then comes editing, and even taking those 200 hours and cutting them down to an hour and a half, taking the 200 hours of film and organizing it, that takes a month. Okay. And being an entrepreneur and the type of person I am, I didn't have the patience for that kind of stuff, but I realized, you're making a piece of art that's going to be in the world forever. So I took some advice from someone and they said, don't rush it. You get one chance to do this. So that was that. And I think maybe the final thing, it's a team effort. You either have all the time to do it yourself, which most people don't have, or the skills. But it definitely takes a team. So make sure, one of the biggest things is make sure you're working with the right people who you enjoy working with. Otherwise, it hurts the experience.
Thank you so much for being here, Adam.
Thank you for having me. It was a pleasure.
You have to make a short advert for your film. How and when can we see it in Flossenbürg?
So if you want to see Everything's Kosher, it's showing on April 24th at the Flossenbürg Memorial event. That's an event going on all week, but my film is showing on Thursday and at 3 p.m. in the afternoon. If you're not going to be at Flossenbürg and you want to check out the film, you can rent it online. And it's my website, and it's everythingskoshermovie.com.
Thank you very much.
Thank you for having me.
Bye-bye.